Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And this program, the one that I'm introducing you to right now, it was recorded live. And as you'll notice, throughout the program, people got more and more and more and more and more excited about it. And they just kept sending me these excited messages. Why were they so excited? How do we get them that excited? Well, I'll tell you in a moment. But first, I need to tell you who was on this program with me. His name is Mark Magnacca. He is the president of Insight Development Group, and he is the author of this book, So What? And the way that he got everyone excited was he illustrated the ideas in this book on the program. He didn't just teach it. He didn't just talk about it. He used it. And the more he used it, the more they saw how they could apply those ideas in their lives, in their business, and what kind of impact it could have. And I think that you're going to have the same experience. I think that as you see the ideas in action, you're going to see how you can apply them for yourself. Everything that I want to do here on Mixergy needs to have a practical impact, a practical place in your life. And that's why I'm excited that we actually use the ideas here and not just talked about them. So here are a few things that you're going to learn throughout this program. You're going to learn a technique for telling people what you do or what your company does or what your web application does, telling them what you do in a way that helps them understand how you fit in with their lives, in a way that helps them remember, in a way that helps them care about what you do. Think about the impact of that. Think about what that means when you're talking at a cocktail party about what you do. Think about what that means when you're building a business and you're trying to tell people what it does. But more than that, they won't just understand it. They're going to remember it in a way that will help them tell others about you. And I know you may not believe it, you're going to see it in action on me. He tested it on me, and you're going to get to see that all live. We also talked about how Coke used a recession, in fact, not a recession, a depression, to build their business, and how you can, in a recession, in a bad environment, use the same technique, the same kind of, let's call it moxie, and you'll understand why, to build your business, even in a tough environment. It should be your opportunity. We also talked about something called the So What Matrix. It can help people care about what you're saying to them. It can help them lean forward like this when you're talking so that they want to pay more attention to what you say. All right, all that and so much more in this program. Here's my program with Mark Magnacca.
Mark, here's the first question. Got your book, read it. For anyone who hasn't read it, So What? What is it about? What's in it for them?
Well, Andrew, I'm reluctant to admit this, but I learned about the so what question the hard way. And a client made me realize that I needed help. And the thing is, what I came to understand is that, like so many people, I was trained to sell myself, my product, and really what was important to me, rather than to think about the other person. And so while the idea of the question, WIIFM, you know, what's in it for me, has been around a long time, what I realized is that was not really the right question. You see, if you think about it, the question, what's in it for me, frames your mind to answer that question. This is the opposite of that question. It's the question, what's in it for you? And what happened for me with one of my clients called the EMC here in Massachusetts was I was getting ready to do this presentation, and my mentor called me in and he said, hey, before you go, I'd like you to do this with me one-to-one. And I said to him, Jeff, you know, for what? Why would you want me to do that? I mean, what am I, auditioning? And he said, yeah. So I go through my whole thing, Andrew, and I realize at the end, he looks at me, he says, I just have one thing to say. So what? And I was crushed. I was crushed. I thought, what do you mean, so what? He said, why is that idea of stretching your comfort zone, why does that matter to me? And why does it matter to my sales force? And I literally sat there speechless. I thought, I feel like such an idiot. How could I not know the answer to that question? And that was the genesis of the whole thing. And I began to discover in my work as a presentation coach, I wasn't the only guy who had this problem. Turns out it was really widespread.
In fact, you gave an example in your book, and So What, of, let's see what his role was. This was someone who was a salesman in the investment industry. And he had this presentation where he talked about how old his company was, and he gave lots of facts that should have been significant, but they weren't going over well. Can you tell that story, please?
Absolutely. And, you know, in the financial crisis that we've been in really since September of 2008, this story is even more poignant because this guy had been through sales training, like so many of us, and he had been taught, my job is to tell you about my company, my products, and myself, in that order. And, you know, as crazy as that sounds, it's happening as we speak every day. People have been taught just like this guy who I talk about in the book named Mike. And so he stands up in front of the group, and the exercise is you've got 3 minutes, 3 minutes to capture your audience's attention and communicate what you think is important. So he starts off and he says, my company was founded in 1868. We have over 4,000 employees worldwide. We were recently named as one of the best places to work in America. And as you watch the audience, as I watched the audience react, I realized there was a collective feeling of, well, so what? And so finally, I couldn't help it. During the debriefing session, I said to him, Mike, are you going to tell me that the fact that you've been around since 1868, does that make you not as good as a company that's been around since 1845? And he says, I don't know. I said, well, what about one of your competitors that has 10,000 employees? You've only got 4,000. Are they twice as good as you? And he starts to turn the same gray color that I turned when my mentor asked me these questions. And I wasn't doing it to be cruel, but simply to point out that he had fallen into the same trap as me, which was organizing your presentation about me, 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 versus thinking with the filter, which I call the so what filter, about what do they actually care about.
And so how did he change his presentation to use what you're just talking about now?
He changed his presentation by using what I call the so what matrix. And the so what matrix is three simple questions. The first question is for what? The second question is so what? And the third question is now what? So I've never done this before, but because I saw you do it and I think it's pretty cool, I'm going to do it right now. So in real time here, it's this simple, all right? So let me do it like this. So for what, so what, now what? Okay, so what I did is in the coaching session with him, I said, Mike, let's start with the for what question, all right? For what reason are you giving this presentation? He says, well, I want to familiarize the audience with my company, my product, and myself. And I said, for what reason? He said, oh, because I want to get an appointment with them to meet with me one-to-one at the end of my presentation. I said, okay, so the for what in this session is to get people to meet with you one-to-one, correct? He says, right. I said, all right, now, so what? Why would I, as a financial advisor, want to meet with you, a guy trying to sell investments? I'm busy. I've got phone calls, client meetings. Why should I do that? He says, oh, it's easy. I can show you how to make more money and work less, kind of along the Tim Ferriss model. He says, and I've got a process that has proven that I can do this consistently. I said, really? Well, don't you think that would be more compelling for you to talk to me than about the nuances of a particular feature on a product? And he says, I guess so. And I said, finally, Mike, what is your call to action? What's the now what? He says, well, that's where I want to tell them that I want to meet with them face to face. So he reorganizes the presentation, Andrew, and he comes back and he starts with this compelling grabber open. He talks about the fact that his company's been around since 1868, but what's different is he says, we have survived three wars. We've survived the Great Depression. He said, and as a mutual company, we are in stronger financial standing now than at any time in our history. Well, now he had our attention. He said, in terms of what I'm here to talk to you about today, I have a process that can help you grow your business to help you earn more money and work less. But in order to do that, it's going to take me about 7 minutes to meet with you one-to-one. And then he segues right into the call to action like this. He says, on the table in front of you is a profile card. I want you to fill out that card, and on your way out the door, you hand it to me. If you hand it to me, I'll use it as an invitation from you to me. And what was remarkable when I actually, as you read about in the book, watched this presentation live, we had about 50 people in the room, and I stood there and watched as people left. By the way, he ended the presentation early, but what was remarkable was that about 35 of the 50 people handed the card and said, the equivalent of, hey, Andrew, I want to meet with you. This had never happened for him before. So I began to realize that this, what I call the matrix, for what, so what, and now what, this simple three questions really could help change your thinking.
All right. I love that, by the way, and I hope people read the book just for that section to find out how Mike did it, because we all hear in – salesmen in the investment industry try to pitch us on working with them, and it is just like you said, it's full of facts that are supposed to sound impressive, but they don't address what we really want. And you've got a few stories like that. You've got the story of the computer salesman, And I've had this too. You walk into a store, you want to buy a computer, and they want to know how much RAM you want. Now, I know how much RAM I want, but most people don't. Am I giving away too many of the stories from the book to ask you to tell that one?
No, absolutely. This is all about spreading this idea. And I think, let me step back for a minute, Andrew, before I tell that story, and say that at the very foundation, what this book is really about is developing what I call the so what mindset. And in the same way that Napoleon Hill talked about a secret in his book, Think and Grow Rich, but he never really told you exactly what the secret is, with the idea being that you'd sort of get it. It was almost like a head fake. The so what book, there is no head fake. The whole concept is summarized in a question. And what's interesting about this particular question is that, unlike so many business ideas, it's easy to apply. So what I'm here to propose is that the single fastest way to change the way you think is to change the questions you ask. Now, all the great religious teachers going back in history talk about, as you think, so shall you be, right? What you think about expands. Earl Nightingale talked about it. Wayne Dyer, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And it's all true, except for one thing. It's not easy to do it. It's sort of like, we all know how to lose weight. You know, take in less calories than you burn. That's a very simple concept, but it's not easy to apply. And so what is designed to do, and the thing that's been most gratifying for me, is to install a new way of thinking. And that new way of thinking is simply by asking yourself a question. I got an email from a reader today who said, in fact, we just printed it out. He said, I used this just before doing a presentation. He was on his way out to California. He read the book on the flight, and he said, I actually went through the presentation, and he went through the presentation with what he called the so what filter. So the concept is, how do you start asking yourself consistently better questions? And so what is about how to do that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but I'm going to do the exact same thing. Before I come on and do any intro for one of my interviews, or before I even do an interview, I'm gonna have these three questions in front of me. Just as I have a checklist of tech issues that I need to deal with before I do an interview, I'm going to put these three questions on that list. And I'm going to keep asking myself, for what? Why am I doing this interview? Why am I here? So what? What's the importance of doing this interview? And now what? And at the end, I need to leave people with something that they need to do as a result of it. Am I right in the way that I'm thinking about this?
Absolutely. It's funny that you say that, because when I was doing my homework, Andrew, prior to the CSI research, as I call it, Tim Ferriss, I knew who that was. Leo Laporte, I didn't know who it was, but he had that clever picture, so it kind of intrigued me.
You're talking about the people on Mixergy.com who I used to...
Yeah, I knew her, right? So I guess that shows that I'm still in the analog world, you know, that I printed off. But then for Gary Vaynerchuk, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know anything about him. So if I could offer an observation in the spirit of so what yes. You just said is dead on, because what I need to know is, what am I going to get from watching the interview of Leo Laporte? What am I going to get? In my case, with Tim Ferriss, it was self-evident. But I think, to the extent you can simply add a tagline to position what's in it for me to spend my time watching this, it's a huge plus.
Absolutely. You're saying that before introducing – you're saying that when I put up a post saying this is the interview that's coming up, I need to tell people not just who's coming up, not just what they've done, but so what? Why should they care about it? Why should they watch?
Absolutely. And what I'm telling you is, I'm a guy who's pretty well read as in terms of the business world, but I'm not as tech savvy as I'm sure many of your viewers are, although I'm pretty good on a Mac. But I don't know who all these people are. Just like when I go to the TED website, I don't know who all of those people are. But to the extent, just like a great headline in a newspaper or on a television news is designed to grab your attention, I feel like so what would help you in terms of connecting this back to, not all of them are equally important for me. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You might be my favorite person to interview ever. Not only did you come in here with, as you call the CSI, what is it called, the CSI report?
CSI research.
CSI research. You knew about what my passions are here. You knew about my mission here. You knew about the other interviews that I did. And you're coming in here and you're helping me. I love you. We're like 20. We're not even 20 minutes into this interview, and I already love you.
How about that? You know, well, I got to tell you something. This is going a lot better than my last interview.
What happened in the last interview?
In the last interview, quite candidly, I didn't have my – I wasn't prepared, and I was trying to do two things at once, and it showed. So I got my – I basically got my – I had handed to me in a very nice way, and in the same way that Jeff Goldberg kind of had to, you know, shake me a little bit with this question, as I began this whole interview, and I got about 25 literally lined up, I decided I better get I better practice exactly what this book is all about, which is know in advance what you're dealing with.
Well, let me thank some of the people here who are watching us live. Jay Mini is telling people that he's watching us and promoting us. Monocat is saying that we're having a little bit of an issue where Twitter's just sending bursts of messages out. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm seeing that same thing, and it's making it a little hard for you to communicate with us. Let's see. Jake Lametta is saying, at Brandon Watson, great interview on Mixergy. Oh, he's talking about a previous interview. SitePoint Matt, I love SitePoint. A lot of people who are building internet companies love SitePoint, and he's telling everyone to watch you. He's saying, everybody go watch the author of So What. Let's see, we've got a couple of other...
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
Andrew, I'm glad, because I've just built a couple of websites. But again, I'm not a tech guy. I'm a marketing guy, and I'm a language and communication guy. So let me offer all of your internet-related viewers, which I think that my instinct is there's a high percentage of people connected in that part of the world. One thing that really bugs me as a guy who's now 40, who is wearing glasses, is how often on websites like a 9-point font is used because the designer likes it. All right? So what I'm here to remind those of you who are such talented graphic designers, it doesn't matter if you like it. It matters if I like it, if I'm your target market. Now, granted, if I'm not your target market, different subject. But to the extent you can appeal to the needs of your target market, where sales and marketing so often separate is they're not thinking about ultimately who the customer is. And so it's just a pet peeve. When you go to a website, I love the websites where I can quickly and visually understand exactly what's going on versus having on my Apple to go Apple Plus and blow the font up to be able to read what's going on.
You know,
just
what? I've got to do that too for my site. I've had a new design for a couple of months now, and one of the things that bugs me about my own site is that it's too hard to read because the font is too small. So you're absolutely right. Is there anything else? Anything else as you're looking around the web? Are there other times where you say, "I wish that the designers had thought so what," that if they had, they'd be improving your experience?
Well, there's a lot of different things that I can share with you as it relates to that particular topic. I'll give you an example just using myself first. If you go to that sowhatbook.com website that I mentioned to you, mm-hmm. One of the things you'll notice is that there's a scrolling feature, which when my web designers first showed it to me, and I used some guys here in the Boston area called iMark, iMARC.net, and they're really talented. And part of their job, Andrew, is to be good salesmen. And by that I mean, sometimes in my experience of working with technical people, they'll talk to me about technical things, but not really give me what I call a so what benefit. So the guy who's in charge of the project, named Dave Tufts, he says, "What do you think about this scrolling capacity?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it's all right, but why does it really make a difference?" I said, "I like it, but is anyone else going to like it?" He said, "Let me tell you this, it's just different enough that I think it adds a compelling element to this website, which makes it different than just one that you click through." So he's someone who helped me to take a leap of faith to try something. He said, "By the way, if you don't like it or you get feedback that doesn't work, we'll simply change it back to the old way." So I think the big idea would be, remember to ask yourself, who is the target market? And I know some of your viewers or listeners are already thinking, "Yeah, but if Steve Jobs had said, who really wants an iPod, would anybody have wanted an iPod?" There's a difference between product innovation and the actual execution on the web in terms of marketing and design. Does that make sense?
Yes. You're saying that once you've innovated, you do need to come back and say, how does this relate to the audience? At that point, you do need to think about them.
I absolutely believe that. And if you think about cars as a perfect example, right? The Germans said, "We're not going to put cup holders in the BMW. because as you're cruising around in Bavaria, in Germany, the idea of drinking your cup of coffee while you're going 125 kilometers an hour or more, it's not part of what they do. But the Germans quickly realized it is part of what we do in the United States. I mean, people drink water, coffee, whatever, when they are in their vehicle. So the Germans had to adopt the idea of putting cup holders in the car, even though from an aesthetic design standpoint, they didn't want to.
Guys, if you are watching us live and you have a question, put it in the box there. I'm actually going to pull up another page because I know that you guys are having some trouble reaching me. I don't know why we're getting flooded with messages on Twitter, but let me find another way to keep an eye on what you guys are saying. And I want to read everything and do my best to ask Mark as many of your questions as possible. So let's go back to a salesman. Somebody comes in, wants to buy a computer. First thing many computer salesmen might do is ask about how much RAM they want, how much hard drive, and you had a different approach that you suggested.
I did, Andrew. Basically, the idea is this. So many people who were trained, including myself, even 10 or more years ago, but certainly 20 or more years ago, we learned about something called FAB, which is features, advantages, and benefits. And now that I've just seen you do that, I just have to do this now. So FAB, and what I'm here to propose is I don't care about your features. I couldn't care less whether it's 60 gigahertz processor and you have 7.5 gigabytes of RAM or of hard drive space. I'm not interested in that until I understand what it's going to do for me. And so what the story is that during my brief stint in corporate America, I had to give up my Mac, although I kept it, and go to a PC. And then subsequently, when I left that experience and started my own company, I had gotten used to using ACT on the PC, so I bought some Dell computers. And in my experience, being in the store shopping for a PC, it was so foreign because the questions people asked me were not related at all to what I as a business owner or entrepreneur needed to know. They asked me technical questions, which was their world, not my world. And so in the book, I've used the example actually of my assistant who went to buy a computer, and she came back and told me the same thing. So if I can connect that one over though, Andrew, I think the best example of what I call the so what benefit, which is really what most salespeople miss, is what is the one big idea that matters more than anything else? And so the first example of this I would give you is when you go to see a movie. You go to see a movie and you watch the trailers or the previews that come on. Very often, the person you're sitting with, the preview plays for, say, 60 seconds. And at the end of that preview, you can see people in the movie do this. They kind of look over at the person they're with like, I don't think so. Or, hey, that looks really good. So my wife and I recently, we were with our children. We saw the preview for the movie Up. And I remember sitting there and thinking, you know what? It's a Pixar movie. It's got great animation. As soon as it was over, my children said, we want to see it. My wife and I said, we're going to go. And then not long after came another movie that was just unbelievably graphic violence for the first 30 seconds. And first of all, it wasn't targeted to me and a family, so I don't know why the preview was playing in a PG theater or movie that was going to be PG. But beyond that, what I realized is in an instant, the vast majority of people in that audience were not going to go see that movie. So the question I would offer to those of your viewers who are internet-oriented or technology-oriented is, what is the real so what benefit? And the so what benefit is the one thing that people say, I want it, I need it, I love it, and I'll buy it. So Steve Jobs, I think, is probably the best example of this, because with the iPod, he transformed a portable disk drive into a product where the mantra was 1,000 songs in your pocket. And that's how you use language to communicate the real benefit to the people who might buy it.
But how would he even know that? You say in the book that the way to find out what people really care about is to ask them, how would you fill in this, or how would you complete this sentence? All I really care about is blank, or some version of that is the way to find out. But there's no way Steve Jobs could say, when it comes to music, can you please fill in this sentence, all I really care about is blank? Because most people would have said, I want it to sound great, or I want the albums to be cheap because I can buy, or I want them to be free because I could get them free online. Sometimes people don't know what they want.
Well, there's no question that that is true. I absolutely agree with that. But within the frame of reference of this sentence completion concept of all I really care about, what it does is it forces people to mentally force rank something. So as an example, if you go back to the iPod, and remember when the iPod first came out, the iTunes store was also just getting started. So the early people buying the iPod, it wasn't the iTunes store wasn't the compelling reason. I don't know about for you, but I bought an iPod when they first came out. I loaded my iPod up with all the music from my own CDs. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that I was buying a lot of music, although I do buy a lot now. So two things on this. First of all, most of your viewers are not in the product innovation business where they're just doing something completely new. Rather, they're very often building on something that already exists. So let's take one that I'm curious to ask you about, Andrew, because I think there's a huge business opportunity. And I'm going to, I may just excuse myself and grab it because I want to show it to you. Let's take the idea of online greeting cards. All right. So hold on just one second while I get this.
All right. Thank you guys who are watching and tweeting out. If you have any questions, please put it in the Twitter box on Mixergy, or go to Twitter directly and just include the name Mixergy in there. Matt, thank you again for tweeting out, and thank you all for telling me about the audio in the beginning. I was able to fix it thanks to you.
Okay, so let me give you an idea. All right, I want to know a little bit more about your background, because we could use your story as a proxy for this idea, and then I'll close the loop on the iPod in just a minute. So in my business, in my training business, one of the things that I had the best of intentions on was in these small groups that would come to my training programs was to drop a handwritten note to each of the participants. And I really, like so many people, had the best of intentions of doing that. And I did it for about two classes. And then I had some double header classes. And for whatever reason, I just lost the ability to do it consistently. So anyway, my assistant found this thing called Send Out Cards. And to show you what we do, we actually take a picture of everybody who's in the class, right? And while I'm in the class, Andrew, it's sort of, you know, text that I've written in advance. It's got my signature, not perfect, but it's pretty good, with a quote there from like Zig Ziglar. So she's in the back of the class on day one sending these cards. We take the picture at lunchtime. And then the people get home, and 2 days later, they get this picture of the class they were in, and inevitably they say to their wife or their significant other, hey, yeah, this is my buddy who was from California, and this is the person who's been, you know, at the company 30 years. It's turned out this has been a really cool memento that transcends the value of the $2 that it cost me to do it. So in terms of a so what I found is that it's not as good as a handwritten note, but it's 90% as good because it's consistently getting done. So my question to you is, from your greeting card business, did you ever think about having a online or a print version of that business?
No, I didn't think of it. I kept thinking that everything needed to move online. I couldn't wait for the day when we were able to automate ad sales and automate every part of the business. I didn't think that there'd be a market in paper, and obviously there is. Obviously, I'm talking to people all day long here who say it's easier to sell atoms than it is to sell bits. And if you would have it's easier for them to bring in revenue when they're actually sending stuff out. So no, well, I wish I had.
Now, the reason I mentioned it to you is because I still think it's a huge business opportunity. I've presented it to a number of my clients. The only problem is a lot of them are sort of a multi-level marketing type approach. And while I don't have any problem with that, some of the companies that I work with, they didn't want to do it that way. And at any rate, the to take this back, Andrew, to the iPod, here's the bottom line. When Steve Jobs and the folks at Apple talked about the iPod, they understood that what you were buying technically was a portable hard disk, 60 gigabyte as an example, one I had, that you could carry around with you. Well, nobody cared about a portable hard drive, but what they did care about was 1,000 songs in your pocket. So what I'm trying to communicate is that sometimes the way you talk about whatever it is that you're doing absolutely changes the way people feel in terms of whether or not they're even interested in hearing your pitch.
I see. Okay, that makes sense. Let me ask you, as you were showing the picture of your students, I wondered, how did you get started as a trainer? How did you get to a place where you were doing double headers, where you were having so many students come in?
Well, that's a good question. What happened is my background is as a financial advisor. So I was a financial advisor for 10 years, and I sold my business in 1999, which turned out to be pretty good timing. And I still loved working with financial advisors, as well as what are called wholesalers, which are the people who actually help financial advisors grow their business, kind of like the guy Mike that I talk about in the book. And so what happened is I found that this confluence of skills that were required happened to be things I was very interested in. A big part about being a successful communicator was the ability to set the stage. And in addition to that, the ability to give presentations really helped to be an effective salesperson, as well as the ability to do good interviews and ask good questions. So it started off with presentation training, and it's now morphed into interview training and referral training. But in essence, so what is the 30,000-foot overview of all the training I do, which is helping people figure out how to crisply and clearly communicate what it is that they do in a way that's memorable and in a way that gives people the information they need to know to move forward.
It's a little bit off track, but where do your customers come from?
The majority of my customers are in financial services.
How do they find you? How do you get to them?
It's almost all referral.
It is.
It's almost all referral. And I'll tell you, Andrew, just going back to the internet, when I first put my own website up, markmagnaca.com, I had a number of people ask me, well, how much business has actually come through your website? And remember that, you know, the training that I sell is very different than selling a product online. And I hadn't really figured out how to monetize kind of the kind of thing we're doing right now. So at any rate, what I realized was that the website was just a touch point, that when people saw the website and they saw it was high quality, they didn't need to watch a 10-minute or an hour-long video of me. They needed to watch 3 minutes. And most people in 30 seconds would be able to say, okay, this is a guy worth talking to. And so what I did is I went into the building of my website with that in mind, that I'm not looking to try to sell you with my website. I'm looking to pass the initial hurdle to have people say, this looks like the kind of guy who understands our business, who can help us. He's helped other people like us. We should talk to him.
I see. All right. There are a couple of things here in my notes that I want to make sure to get to, including when people ask you, what do you do? I love the way that you help them structure their answer. Can you talk about that? Because I get asked that all the time. What do you do? Everybody does.
It's true, Andrew. And I'll tell you that I have a little different angle on this, because I'm certainly not the first guy, particularly in Silicon Valley or here in Boston, who's talked about an elevator speech. It's a concept that I actually wrote about in my first book called The Product Is You. I'll just give a little plug right here. This is The Product Is You. And that was a book that was primarily for advisors. So I talked about it in that book, but what's different in So What, and the reason that I felt it needed to be updated and refreshed for 2009 and beyond, is because most people who've developed an elevator speech still fail the So What test. Meaning they've come up with a collection of words that's succinct, but it still doesn't cause you to say, really, how do you do that? So the example that you may remember from the book is from this guy named Floyd, who was an automotive consultant.
What a great example. I still remember what he does. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead. So let's try it. Now, have you read the whole book?
Yes.
You have?
Okay, I've read it, and I've got my notes all around it, including a big circle around the section about him. Where is that?
Okay, so let me practice this with you here. And obviously, we didn't set this up in advance.
Uh-huh.
So let's pretend, Andrew, that you have a neighbor, and it happens to be a young woman who is 22 years old. Now, I give you that example because in my experience and the research I've looked at, although most Americans dislike the car buying process, the demographic that most dislikes it is women between 18 and 24. So anyway, this 22-year-old, she's just graduated from college. You see her outside in Santa Monica in the driveway. She says, hey, Andrew, my car died last week. I got to buy a new car. I dread the process of going to buy a new car. Just in your own words, having only read it once, what would you say to her to communicate who Floyd is, what does he do, what kind of a process does he have, and maybe even what does he charge?
Oh, absolutely. I don't even have the best memory. I don't have it in my notes, but I'll tell you what I remember from it, and then we'll tell people how it is that I remember. He will help you find the right car. He'll actually show you the different options that you have. Once you pick the right car, he will negotiate the deal for you, and he'll do it all for $250, I think.
Wow, $295. Really close, though. Yep. So, Andrew, think about what just happened here. And for anybody watching, I want you to pay close attention, all right? Andrew read that one time, all right? I kind of feel like an infomercial guy doing that. But he read it one time, and he not only remembered it, but he remembered it well enough to be able to tell somebody else. So here's the question for you. What if you could figure out how to articulate what it is that you do in such a clear and compelling way that when you're done, someone says, really? Well, how do you do that? Just think of the power of that as it relates to your business.
Absolutely. And that they would remember it well enough that they could start promoting for me to the right people. So how is it that he stood out? What was it? What was that formula that Floyd used?
Okay, so the formula goes like this, and it really comes back to what we started with for what, so what, now what.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you have to think about is what are the primary challenges your customers face? So let's just take, let's go back to your old business for a minute of online greeting cards. So I'll just do a quick example of this with you, because you still know a little bit about that business, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So talk to me about what are the biggest challenges that people who want to use electronic greeting cards face? What's the reason why they even want to do this?
The big reason was people who are out of touch with family members or friends and wanted to just ping them and say, hi, I'm still in your life, without having the long, drawn-out conversation that might come up, that might go with it. They would do it because they already talk enough and they just want to stay involved in somebody's life. They do it to reconnect.
Okay, so this is good. So this out of touch, what I'm hearing from you then, Andrew, as I try to filter it, is I want to communicate with you to let you know I'm thinking about you, but I don't really want to engage in a conversation or even send you an email.
Yeah.
Okay, so now tell me, what's the biggest frustration people have? People who were users...
They couldn't come up with an email. Oh, you're absolutely right. This is very interesting. Yes, in the online greeting card business, the problem was they couldn't come up with an email to say to their daughter, hey, I'm just emailing you just because. Or it was inappropriate to do that. Or it was inappropriate to email an old friend or a mother and just say, hey, Mom, just thinking about you.
Okay, now let's think about Hallmark built a whole business on precisely what you're talking about, mm-hmm. right? Because we don't what is the reason Hallmark cards exist? We don't have the words at our command to express our emotions in a way that we don't feel goofy about.
Yep.
Right? So we take someone else's words and we sign our name to it. So let me add to this. And it was called Bradford and Reed, correct?
Yep.
All right. So my experience of Hallmark and several Blue Mountain, was that another one?
Yep. They were the big ones in the business.
Okay. My experience of it was there was a cheesy element of like all the different ads going off. And I liked it. I mean, some of them had like a jib jab quality. They had cool little videos and stuff. But compare that to, remember iCards on the Apple website?
Yes.
It may have been... These were really beautiful images, and I can tell you that I used to send a lot of those where it was just a beautiful image, let you put the name in. So what I would do in filtering this process down in very short time, you said out of touch, keep in touch, and the big frustration for them is they needed to come up with, in a sense, something to say. So part of what you did was make it easy for them to communicate.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. And did you also have some of the cards that had pre-written stuff that they could just sign their name to?
Yeah, it was almost all pre-written. You could add a note to it.
Okay, so what we would do is we use the following formula. It's a real simple formula. The formula is, do you know how, dot, 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 and then, well, what I do is. So, do you know how, dot, 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 and then, well, what I do is. So... The way this works is I would answer the first question from what you said, the do you know how, and create what I call, Andrew, an undeniable truth. An undeniable truth is something that 98% of Americans would agree with. Do you know how most people like chocolate?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody nods their head. Yeah, most people like chocolate. Yeah, there's some people who are allergic and some people who don't like it. Most people like it, all right? So an undeniable truth is something that's going to connect with people in that way. So I'm going to make this up in real time with you, all right? So I'm going to say something like this. If I'm you and we're at one of those networking meetings and someone says to me, okay, so you're with Bradford and Reed. So what do you do anyway? I might say something like, well, do you know how so many people want to keep in touch with their friends and family, but they don't really have time to call or email everybody individually? Pause. Most people at this point, yeah. Well, what we do is have a really cool application that allows you to send electronic cards, like a Hallmark greeting card, to as many people as you want in a very easy way for free. Now, that's my first cut at it. It might take a few more cuts, but that's the essence of the idea.
That's wonderful, and that's something that people get right away. As it is, online greeting cards are still tough for people to understand. They think that they're typing in a greeting card online and it goes by paper. You explained it very easily. You explained the need. That is incredible. So for anyone who's listening or watching us, the formula that you used is, you said, do you know how? Fill in the blank with an undeniable truth. Well, what I do is, and then you talk about how you solve that.
That's it. And therein lies the so what part of it. Because in the book, it's actually on page 100. I've got the whole formula. And by the way, on the sowhatbook.com website, if you go there, we're just posting some new ones, but there's 10 sample ones that you can download just to give you a frame of reference. I'll give you another example, Andrew. I had a dentist, and he was at one of these small business meetings that I did. And he said to me, Mark, my biggest problem, and I didn't realize how big of an issue this was as a dentist, people don't come to the dentist because they're afraid. And, you know, to try to explain sedation dentistry to a lot of people. So here's what we came up with for him. He literally used to say this. I said, tell me what you say right now. And people say, what do you do? He said, do you know how when you get a black spot in your tooth, it hurts? He says, well, what I do is when people come in, I give them a woo, and I fix the problem. And I thought, oh my God, you're using this technology in a way that will make it worse for you, right? I said, you can't use that sound effect, and you don't want people thinking about a black spot in their tooth. That's all wrong. He said, well, what else could I do? So I took him through the same little process that you did. And I kid you not, before he left that day, this is in 45 minutes, we go around the room, and this is what he says. He says, do you know how so many people are afraid of going to the dentist because they've had a bad experience in the past? He said, well, what I do is perform such a gentle type of dentistry that you don't even realize you've been to the dentist until you get home and see how great your smile looks. And then people are looking around like, wow. Now, some of your viewers will say, well, that's kind of corny. Well, you tell me, which one is more important for you to burn in someone's mind? This or gentle dentistry that you don't even realize you've been to the dentist until you get home and see how great your smile looks? It can be used for anything.
I got to get people. You guys, if you're watching this, you've got to get this book. I don't mean to sound like a pitch man, but I don't care. When I'm into something, I've got to tell people about it. What's the page that this is on? Because around it, you also – oh, here we go. All right. If you take a look at page 100 is where you start helping people by giving them questions that they need to think of, right, that will
That's
help
correct.
Them get to that statement that will – tell people what they do in a way that answers the so what question. So page 100, get the book, look at page 100. You're going to know the exact the way to think this through, right?
I'll tell you, Andrew, that anybody who's starting a new business, you know, let's say they've read Think and Grow Rich, they've watched some of your other authors, and they're thinking about expanding their business in some way, and they've got a business plan, and it might be a one-page business plan. I'm here to tell you that almost everything I've read, and I've met lots of entrepreneurs, lots of venture capitalists, angels, over and over again, people make a judgment quickly based upon your ability to articulate the answer to this very important question. And I can just tell you that I was at the MIT Enterprise Forum one time many years ago. It was back in 99 during the boom. And I'll never forget how brutal capitalism really is, watching it in this little forum. Because on my left, at the next table, a guy gets up to deliver his what was then called the elevator speech. I call it the so what positioning statement to make it a little different. He gets up, and it turns out he's actually a rocket scientist. This is a guy who has a PhD in rocket science, and he's at MIT. He gets up, and he starts to try to communicate as the CEO of this startup company what it is that they do. And I'm listening intently. And you look around the table, and pretty soon people are doing like this. The guy's just twisting in the wind, and it's painful to watch. The next thing you know, the next table goes. This guy gets up. He may have half the IQ. He may have scored half as high on his SATs, and he's not a rocket scientist. He walks up, bang. He just nails it with a version of, do you know how? People are nice. Well, what we're going to do is this, and here's how we're going to do it. He's got the right enthusiasm. As soon as the breakfast presentations are over, I look around. There's like 15 angels standing at his table asking questions. Meanwhile, the rocket scientist is by himself. Even the guys at his table left. So it's not fair, but it's the way it is. You've got to be able to answer in a succinct, powerful way, why should they care? And not sell them everything on that initial foray.
I was thinking that as you told me, as you were talking earlier, I was thinking this would be the way I would want to hear about a new web app. This is the way I would want to hear about a new product. I go as I'm a judge a lot in these business plan competitions, and people will have incredible technology, but they'll leave us just scratching our heads wondering, what is it used for? Why should we care? What do we even hear? If they just started off by saying, you know how, identify the problem, tell me how this fits into my world as a solution, I'd love them, and I'd be able to pay attention and understand the whole rest of their presentation. And by the way, let me say this. This isn't just me getting excited. We're having some issues with Twitter. Apparently Twitter is bursting out the comments here. So I'm picking up here and there what people are saying. People are loving you on Twitter. Listen to this. What is this? This is I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your name here, but he says, so far, the best interview on Mixergy.com is live right now. Keenan is saying, whoa, that's insane. Do you know, I can't keep reading what he's saying, but he's got a couple. Holy crap, this guy just sold me on his book, and then he's linking over. I guess he's watching us on Ustream, not on Mixergy.com. Guy who's on Twitter, his Twitter name is Blackie Sky, watching a great interview on Mixergy.com and a whole bunch of others. Oh, my, here he goes. My God, this guy is great. Go watch it. It's crazy. You're absolutely right. This is great.
Let's give him some more. We're not done. Please. We're not done because I got a few more things to give you.
Oh, and guys, I see that some of you are emailing me because you can't get in on Twitter, and some of you are watching on Ustream, others on Mixergy.com. I'm sorry that I can't get it all together here. There's an issue with Twitter. Okay,
all right,
sorry.
So, Andrew, this is the black and white version of what I call the visual table of contents, mm-hmm. All right? And what you'll see is that I actually use this myself for the same reason we were just talking about. This is one visual icon to help me remember the key idea of each one of the chapters. So just a couple things I wanted to give you that I think some of your viewers or listeners will like. Who had the so what mindset? George Lucas had the so what mindset. And I don't know if you knew that story before this book. I didn't know it. I actually found the story on the DVD. I was watching with my son the bonus material for the Star Wars trilogy. And I read this and I listen to it and I'm watching the DVD and I think, this can't be real. And I did some more research on it. For those of you who don't know this, George Lucas, who created Star Wars, that momentous opening with a galaxy a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. And as those letters scroll across the screen, he had to get special dispensation from the Screen Actors Guild to open his movie without credits. And what Lucas realized, he said, look, how can I have a space saga that begins with director of casting, right? Director of photography, all the different roles. So he gets special dispensation. Star Wars goes on to be the biggest movie practically of all time. He comes out with The Empire Strikes Back, and he goes back and he says, look, I want to do that thing I did for Star Wars. No opening credits. Now, mind you, the first guy who's supposed to get credits would be him, George Lucas. And the Screen Actors Guild says, no. And the Directors Guild says, no. And he says, what do you mean, no? They say, not only no, if you choose to do that again, we are going to fine you and your new director, who Irving Kirshner directed that one, $250,000. And Lucas says, you just don't get it. This is about me creating experience for my audience. This is not about me giving kudos to the people who've acted in the movie. Let them get that at the end. He gets so disgusted, he quits the Screen Actors Guild. He quits the Directors Guild. He pays the fine. And, of course, Empire Strikes Back goes on to blow the doors off. I tell you that story because George Lucas understood the power of asking the so what question. Now, before you get to thinking that what that means is that this is an absolute rule, I want you to understand I'm not giving you the gospel. I'm giving you some principles. So the principle is do what matters for your audience. So you take the second most profitable film franchise, James Bond. In your mind, how does that James Bond movie open? What's the first thing you remember?
The gun being aimed at the audience, and then the screen goes into a circle.
Screen goes in, and then what color comes down?
Red, I think.
He's red, right? He shoots the bullet, and then the red comes down, okay? So think about it. In the case of James Bond, the opening of the movie with the beautiful women, right, and the colors, and then the famous gunshot where the red comes down, those movies were designed to help set the stage for what was coming, and it kind of warmed you up for it. So the beauty of what thinking is, I'm not saying that Lucas is always right or that the director of the various Bond movies were always right. I'm saying that you got to think about what matters to your audience and present it in a way that's compelling to them.
All right, how do people follow up? What's the 21-day challenge? How do we take it beyond this conversation?
Okay, 21-day challenge. I actually came up with this idea while writing Chapter 9, which is the story of Moxie. And that's the last story I'll give you for today. Here's what you need to know. In 1920, Moxie was the most popular soft drink in America, bigger than Coca-Cola. In 1930, as the Depression began, Moxie made a decision. They were headquartered here in Massachusetts, and the decision was we're going to cut all spending. We're going to cut all promotion. We're going to cut all advertising, and we're going to focus on just keeping our existing customers. Meanwhile, Coca-Cola makes a decision to strategically promote their message in spite of the overall downturn. And I want to remind you, as we experience this current economic downturn, just like in the 1930s, I'm not denying that it was tough, but 70 million people went to the movies every week, even during the Depression. And guess what? A lot of them bought a Coke when they were there and not a Moxie. So we'll continue to promote. Just before World War II, Coca-Cola makes a deal that Coke becomes part of C rations. By 1945, some 11 million GIs have been exposed to Coca-Cola. They've brought it all over the world in the European and Pacific theaters. Coca-Cola becomes the biggest soft drink in the world. In 1945, Moxie is effectively vanquished, and it's purchased by another Coca-Cola bottler. The message is this. To this day, Coca-Cola continues to master the art of reminding you about an important idea. I call it the So What Reminder. Coca-Cola does it with billboards. They do it with advertising. They do it with slogans. They keep themselves top of mind, and they don't take for granted that they know that you're going to remember to drink it. So in terms of me reminding you, you sign up. All you got to do is buy the book, and I took a nod from Tim Ferriss on this one. The code to get you in, it's free, but you got to have the name that's on a page in this book. You enter that name in, and for 21 days, you're going to get an email that soon will include video, kind of like what we're doing here, Andrew, to remind you about these ideas. Because, Andrew, I'm in the business of taking ideas that used to be in the front of your mind, that move to the back of your mind, and help you bring them back up to the front of your mind. The 21-day challenge gets you to do this just long enough that you start to create a mental circuit breaker that the so what question can help you stop the negative thinking and ask yourself a better question.
I'm still here. Did something happen on? Okay, so they have to have the book in order to go to sowhatbook.com and get the 21
days. No, you can go to sowhatbook.com, take a look around. You can read, you can download some of the stuff. But in order to get in on the 21-day challenge, you got to buy the book. And let me tell you this, the book's like $12 at Amazon. It's even less, I think, now. I believe that there's a lot of investments as a former investment advisor that it's hard to say you're going to have a good return on investment over the next 12 months. I feel, based on the feedback I've gotten, we've sold over 6,500 copies. It's only been out a month. I can tell you that you spend $12 on this and you invest in your most important asset, and that's you. Your ability to apply even one of these ideas, I think, can transform your ability to achieve your goals this year.
You know what? The best investment ever. The only thing that I never kept myself from spending money on is books. They're so cheap for what you get in return. And I feel a little bit like a huckster for trying to promote a book. But screw it. We promote everything. I promote the iPod every day that I'm on it. I tell people how much I love it.
So do I.
Why shouldn't I promote books? This is the absolute best bargain. You can avoid everything else, and if you just keep buying books and reading them, and I got to show people how to read books quickly, you'll just keep getting better and better. You'll just get smarter. Your business will grow. Your understanding of the world will grow. The best value there is. So please go out there, get a copy of this book. It took me no time at all to read it. Look at this. Get a copy of So What and go on to sowhatbook.com and be a part of the 21-day challenge. All right.
Andrew, thank you so much for what you're doing. I'm as I told you before we started here, the other tattered copy that I have here, you're doing in the 21st century what Napoleon Hill did in the 1920s and 1930s. And to this day, his work has continued to make a difference. And I expect that your work will be doing the same thing.
Thank you very much. Thank you for doing this interview. I appreciate it. And thank you all for watching and all of you who've sent in comments a million different ways. So many compliments to you. And I hope they all go out there and buy the book and check out your website. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Andrew. Look forward to talking to you again.
You bet.
And there it is. All right. As always, the first thing I'm going to ask you for is the most meaningful connection you and I could have, your feedback. I want to hear your ideas. Come back to Mixergy.com and tell me what you thought of this program. Did I live up to the promise that I made at the beginning of the program? Did I give you techniques that you can use? If you use them, come back to Mixergy and tell me how you use them. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you in a way that will help me understand who you are, in a way that will help me get to know you. And also, if you post it publicly, if you come back to Mixergy.com and post your feedback as a comment on the post where you saw this video, then others can get to hear you and others can connect with you. And that's something that excites me. I want to start helping. I want to start building a community here on Mixergy.com. Second thing is I sold it pretty much in the interview. You could see people getting excited about it. So I'm going to suggest one more time that you go and get a copy of So What. If you're in your bookstore, pick it up off the shelf, flip through it, and I think you'll see more depth to some of the ideas that we talked here today. Finally, click around Mixergy.com. I've got tons of programs like the one you just watched that will help you build your business. Remember my mission here. Remember my mission for you to help you build a business that will leave a legacy, to help you build a business that will leave your mark on the world. And that's what I'm here to do. So thank you for watching. I'm Andrew Warner. I'll see you in the comments.